Hey everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Indie Film Cafe. I am your host, Paulie Presenza, otherwise known as the Moo Cow, Moo. And today, I'm going to be joined by a pair of very special guests all the way from North Carolina. And we are talking about none other than my previous co-host, Miss Lenore Miller, and her sister, Yolanda Miller. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me. I know it's been a while for you, Lenore, right?
Yeah.
Have you been watching any stinky movies since you moved back home?
I'm taking a film literacy class, but they're having me watch mostly documentaries, so not really. I watched The Nun yesterday.
Oh, outstanding. All right. Well, I'm glad you guys are still staying in the stinky movie loop. And this particular time, we are going to be doing a film from 1953 called Cat Women of the Moon. An extremely realistic science fiction tale that's just brimming over with incredibly accurate science. So I'm sure you guys have a lot to talk about that. So if you just give us 2 seconds while we hear some mood music, we will return and talk about this silly film. And we are back. So, I'm going to ask you two, what did you guys think about Cat Women of the Moon?
I thought it was really, it was definitely a movie.
Yes.
It had a plot. It didn't make a lot of sense, though.
No.
It reminded me of that episode of Star Trek, Spock's Brain. It was a lot. Also, it reminded me a bit of this new game called Among Us. I don't know if you've played it.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, new game. Oh, it's 2 years old. Oh, yeah.
What have you done with Spock's Brain?
Yeah, basically you're buying Spock's Brain and Among Us, and you're pretty close to the quality of this movie.
Actually, that's probably better quality than I would have expected. I mean, it was very silly and very weird. And I'm sure working for NASA, there were lots of interesting things you could point out.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, let me talk a little bit about the background of the film. So, like I said, the movie was made in 1953. It was directed by a guy named Arthur Hinton. He was an editor, a longtime film editor, who he was working in movies back in the 20s and 30s. And in fact, he worked for W.C. Fields comedies back in the 40s. And he was actually nominated for an Academy Award for Best Editing in a movie called The Killers in 1946. So, as far as an editor goes, guys seem to have some bona fides. As far as being a director, he was mostly a television director. He directed a number of episodes on things like Lassie and Mission Impossible, Police Story, Hawaii Five-O, and in fact, Honey West as well. And I think he actually was nominated for 2 Primetime Emmys. But as far as movies go, like movies you would see in the theater, he didn't do very many of those, and this is one of his few ones, and you could pretty much see why. So he wasn't a very particularly great director, but I guess he knew all the basics. As far as the people involved, we have the main guy was Laird Granger, played by Sonny Tuft. He's the sort of square-jawed hero of the whole movie.
Believe me, baby, if I ever fell in love with you, I'd chase you across the world, around the moon, and all the way stations in between.
He was kind of like a sort of minor celebrity star in the 40s, early 40s. His first movie was So Proudly We Hail, which is like a World War II actioner. And that's kind of really about it. He was named as the Star of Tomorrow in 1944. And then he did some musical comedies and some crappy westerns, and unfortunately for him, he kind of developed into being an alcoholic. Then at some point, he actually apparently bit the thigh of a stripper and was kind of like pretty much became persona non grata in Hollywood.
Yeah.
As you do. Then he kind of had a minor comeback later on, and he appeared in The Seven-Year Itch in 1955, and he was sort of in a few other little minor things up and into the 60s, culminating with another stinker that I have from 1967 called Cotton Pickin' Chicken Pickers, which is, yeah, it's another kind of space movie, but a very different kind of space. And then we have Kip Risinger, who's being played by Victor Jory. He was the professor, quote unquote. And he was in, he was in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay.
That was like his big thing. Like, he played a minor character in that. But otherwise, he was in a bunch of B stuff. Doug Smith is played by William Phipps. He was in a number of different underground movies or B movies. They Live by Night in 1948, The Outriders in 1950, The Red Badge of Courage in 1951, Snow Creature, which is a great stinker back in 1954, and Invaders from Mars, War of the Worlds, a whole bunch of stuff. So he's probably a face that stinky movie lovers would recognize from being in a bunch of different things. As far as our cat women go, we have Alpha being played by Carol Brewster. She was in a bunch of lesser B movies, and then she actually ended up getting the polio virus in 1955, and she had to spend a month at an iron lung, so that's not fun. And then she recovered, and then later on she was in Son of Sinbad in 1959, and actually made an appearance in Rosemary's Baby in 1968. Lambda is played by Susan Morrows, and she starred with Charlton Heston in The Savage in 1952, but she's mostly known for being on TV. So she was in episodes of like Gunsmoke and Sea Hunt, Perry Mason, The Maverick, The Loretta Young Show, that kind of thing. And then she was in an interesting movie called Canadian Mounties versus the Atomic Invaders.
Fun.
Of course. Helen is played by Marie Windsor. You know, she was the navigator. She is known as the Queen of the Bees. She was in a whole bunch of bee movies. She was in Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy in 1955. She was in The Killing in 1956. The Day That Mars Invaded Earth in 1963. Freaky Friday in 1976. Salem's Lot in 79. Commando Squad in 1987. And of course, back in 56, she was in Swamp Woman. So there were a bunch of B movie veterans in here. And I do also have to point out that this is one of those rare movies that when it was shot, it was actually shot in 3D. I don't know whether you could tell, because nobody could tell, because it wasn't done very well. So yeah, a lot of weird, wacky things happen. So Eleanor, you're pretty good, or I'm sorry, Lenore, you're pretty good at encapsulating the plots of films. You think you can do that for Catwoman of the Moon?
A laughably unprepared crew goes to the moon, lands on the dark side, and a mind-controlling alien woman get involved, and then they leave.
Okay. Pretty much. Very good. What about these cat women? Why are they cat women?
I don't know. They're not cats. Maybe Spider Woman, because they're spiders, but there were no cats.
Oh, spiders. Do tell about the spiders.
Giant cave spiders. They're very obviously like just Halloween puppets. To be honest. The spiders made me laugh because at one of the labs at NASA, for some reason, there is a giant puppet spider hanging from the ceiling.
Oh my God. Well, now we know why.
Yeah, it's just there.
There were two of them.
Maybe, yeah, there were two. I was thinking maybe they were called Catwoman because, I don't know, there were no dudes on this in this why society. Cat? And maybe they said Catwoman to kind of communicate that idea for some.
Where are your menfolk?
You're the first man I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like a saying from the 40s and 50s, like a, you know, an aggressive or a female who is you know, not demure, like you're supposed to be, quote unquote, would be considered a cat woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it may have had more derogatory feelings back then. It's a very different world now, fortunately. But remember, this is happening in the early 50s. So you had World War II, and you had women sort of, you know, coming out of the household to help out with the war effort because they had to. And a lot of them found out that, boy, we can kind of go out in the world and do things on our own. We don't really need men. We can kind of do our own thing. We're just as good as them. We can do pretty much everything they can do. And boy, did that not scare the living crap out of a lot of men, and a lot of very conservative men.
And this movie was meant to tear them down, I'm guessing.
There you go. So hence the cat women and their horrible plan to bring their society back to earth and, you know, make the men, I guess, worthless, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is that, well, first, Helen was wearing pants, which is unusual for this time period. I think they wanted to portray a certain image for her. Her voice was higher pitched and she looked a little bit older than what you'd expect this kind of movie. Also, she was supposedly very brilliant, but then we find out later her brilliance was the result of being mind controlled, and I didn't really like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's some strange sexual politics going on too. Apparently, she was sort of, there's like some kind of weird triangle going on between her and Sonny Tupp's character and the commander.
Yeah, that confused me. I was so confused about who she was actually dating. I think it was Kit. Okay.
It's hard to say. And then one of the other guys gets infatuated with one of the cat women, who seems to have a soft spot for men, which was interesting. Whereas the other ones are all couldn't wait to kill them. So I thought was funny.
Don't let go, Kip.
Helen, what's the matter?
Danger, Kip. They want to kill you. They'll take the spaceship and they'll make me go with them.
Well, how?
They can, Kip. They control me.
Technically, they're invaders, so.
Yeah. So another thing I wanted to point out is Elmer Bernstein did the score for this particular film. And Elmer Bernstein was nominated for 14 Academy Awards, and he actually won one in 1967 for Thoroughly Modern Millie. So how the hell did he end up doing the music for this piece of crap is beyond me. But he did. I guess he did a lot of stuff early in his career. But there's a lot of weird dialogue and weird stuff in this film. You know, I think my favorite is where the one guy is being, you know, the guy who's greedy is being tempted out to see the gold. And he says, "You're too smart for me, baby. I like them stupid." Which I think says an awful lot about the generation of men that were afraid of these cat women.
That guy was kind of funny, to be honest. Yeah, he kept having all those getting rich quick schemes. I liked that he didn't pretend to be anything else.
And I noticed he had one of those creepy paper-thin mustaches.
Yeah, he was kind of funny. He was the person easiest to pick out in the cast, too. That helped. Yeah, everyone else looked the same. But he's a funny character, anyway.
Oh, they were all funny. Even Helen, I remember at one point where I think she says something along the lines of, "Somebody needs to cook your meals." I mean, of course, woman's place. In most of the movies from that period, we touch on, you know, usually there are domestic chores that women usually have to do. And in this particular case, they didn't really do that so much, which was good. But let's talk a little bit about the very weird set, that rocket ship. How realistic, Miss Lenore, was that rocket ship? I see you laughing over there.
Horribly inaccurate.
You think?
It's basically just a regular office building in space. It had like lawn chairs.
Yes.
Hammocks. Well, actually, they do kind of sleeping hammocks. But not bunk bed hammock chair things.
With very, very thin mattresses.
Also, I noticed Helen's station was literally just a desk, a wooden desk. Weird for a navigator.
And they had chairs with wheels.
And paper. And yeah, a lot of things that would not be. Oh, also the beekeeper's uniform that they were using as a hazmat suit.
Well, just in case. I mean, there are spiders apparently in space, so there could be bees.
And the spacesuits were just diving suits, but not all of them had the same helmet. Some of them looked like they had the, some of them were completely round, with like part of their face going, and others had a metal helmet thing. Yeah.
I love how they're all like kind of laying down and a couple of them are looking like, oh my God, like they can't, you know, wait for this to end. But the very first thing Helen does, you notice when she gets up, what does she do? She starts brushing her hair and caring for her makeup.
Yeah, hair acts oddly in space. Yeah. Everybody's hair just kind of floats around their head. Yeah, so a lot of people have short hair. I didn't really see her applying makeup. I just saw her combing her hair.
And she's always complaining about the shoes being too heavy.
Oh,
and
something that really annoyed me.
And then she had cigarettes.
Yeah, it was annoying. I mean, I kind of liked that it wasn't pointless. She did have a point with the shoes being too heavy because supposedly the atmosphere was the same and like the cigarettes were light. I kind of liked that actually had a point. One thing that annoyed me at the start was when like, what was it? White Sand kept trying to hail the ship and they're like, they were just taking a nap. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And even when they woke up, they didn't bother to respond for like another 5 minutes.
No sense of urgency.
Yeah, it's like, dude, come on.
White Sands is not the one that does mission control.
I was going to say, I think isn't White Sands, I didn't even know they had NASA at White Sands. I thought that was just Air Force.
I think it is.
Yeah, so they should have been doing Cape Canaveral or something. But I don't know. I don't know who was doing that in 1953. You might have a better handle on that.
The part I found really funny is when they asked, have any words for the people at home? And he says no. Yeah. That was kind of funny.
What was going on with the meteor?
I have no idea. There was a part where the ship turned around and then it turned back. I guess they like fixed the engine or something.
Yeah, they said that they had a meteor go into their rear section where the atomic chamber is.
Yeah. That's not the thing. If they were going on nuclear power, it's not really a nuclear, it's not really an atom chamber. It's like maybe I shouldn't even talk about that part. But it's not an atom chamber. I don't know what an atom chamber is because the Large Hadron Collider did not exist at this time.
And I was kind of confused by the guy with, like, the fire extinguisher when they said something about, like,
yes!
Yeah, like nitric gas or something, like so acidic vapors. A fire extinguisher is not going to do anything.
When he said that there was a problem with the water line, I'm like, there's a water line?
Oh, there is actual water lines on space stations.
Is there? For drinking?
Yeah, they have to filter the water and transport it.
Do they use it for bathing?
Yes. Why wouldn't
they? I never thought about how to take showers in space.
Very carefully.
Okay.
Space shower. But yeah, so he has to go down and into the steam. I mean, that's what it looked like. It looked like there was steam coming out of it. And then he goes and he sprays the fire extinguisher. And that's it. And then I guess the meteor just pops out on its own because you never see it again. It's not a problem anymore.
If a meteor could actually hit the ship, there would be a hole in the ship.
And that's
big, aren't they?
Yeah. And that wasn't the only one. Remember, at one point, they're on the surface, and they're going towards the cave, and he goes, look out, meteor!
Yeah, what even was that thing? It did not look like a meteor.
I mean, they are supposed to be rare, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah, the near the asteroid belt, that's not as densely packed as books and movies. You could easily navigate through it.
I love how, you know, she, Helen, you know, she's, you know, when she gets her turn to talk and she says, Alpha, we're on our way. And then later on, the commander asks, you know, what are you talking to? What is Alpha? And she's like, I don't remember saying that. And he says, oh, that must have been space madness. Space madness? Is that a thing?
Kind of. It's more brought about by isolation. One of the things astronauts have to be tested for is how well they can handle isolation or isolation in a small group. Like there's a lot of psychological testing. You aren't really sent up into space without them knowing how you react to stress.
I don't know. I got to wonder if any of these people would have been sent up in space. Would any of them have passed any tests?
No.
I misheard. I thought she was saying Alfred, we're approaching. I thought she was talking to her husband on Earth or something.
Nope, no Alfred. It was Alpha. And that's who the lead cat, Alpha. Also, I noticed that when they're talking to quote-unquote mission control, the first time he says they're traveling 7 miles per second, and then he comes back and says they're traveling at 25,000 miles per hour. So is that the same? Is that different? Is that right or wrong? Or what's going on with that?
Let me do some calculations real quick. Let's see, 7 miles a second. Where's my calculator? There we go. 7 miles a second times 60 is going to give us 420 miles a minute. Times another 60. He can't see it. Never mind. 25,200 miles an hour.
All right. So it looks like they got that part of it correct. That's good.
Yeah. Wait, 7 miles a second? Yes. 7 miles a second times 60 gives you miles a minute. 60 minutes an hour multiplied by another 60. Okay. Yeah. I added 120.
Nice. Yeah. So. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you noticed, but it looked like they changed in high school lockers too. I wonder if that's changed any since then.
Our high school didn't have lockers.
Interesting. So we talked about the spider puppets. What about the Catwoman dance? The dance of the Catwoman. Please talk to me about that.
I thought we were doing yoga or something.
We actually watched this on double speed by accident, and it looks very funny on
double speed. No, it wasn't an accident. No, it's not an accident.
It looks very funny on double speed.
Yeah, sure.
I thought they were like maybe pointing to people that we were going to send to the Earth. It kind of sucks for everyone else, though, that only three are going to go, and it's like, well, see the rest of you later. I guess you're going to die now.
I guess it's supposed to be sultry. But there's a lot of weird, remember in Lost Skeleton Cadaver, where they do a lot of dancing. Well, if you look at movies in this period, you know, that's another thing that was like a big threat to certain people, was the fact that people were dancing, these damn kids are dancing. And
the actual dance looks like somebody directing traffic.
Yeah, that probably encapsulates that pretty well. It's just so weird. It's just yet another, ominous thing that these horrible cat women are doing. They're dancing. Oh my gosh. And they're black leotards.
I mean, to be honest, you don't often see people break out to dance, like just as a group, without any lead up or anything.
I thought it was funny that the people sleeping could hear the music. That's just like being in a college dorm.
And I love the extra heavy makeup too, the really overly exaggerated eyebrows.
They look like Romulans.
I mean, Lando was like really pretty, but the other two, I think the makeup is over the top. Another thing I noticed, close-ups of Helen and any of the Catwoman, their eyelashes were way overdone. I mean, it was obvious that they did the makeup separately for these close-ups.
Well, the only thing I can think of is that they made their eyelashes like that just in case their hands or fingers were inoperable, and then they could actually touch the controls with their eyelashes and, you know, manipulate things.
It's a sad theory. Maybe they're trying to emulate the cave spiders.
It could very well be. It could very well be. Yeah, Spider Women of the Moon would have made a lot more sense. I think you're right about that.
You'll share man's greatest thrill as you rocket through space to the lost moon city of alluring, ferocious cat women. Theirs is the fevered fury of life without love, goading them to lure men into the den of bloodthirsty moon monsters, driving them to tempt men in the deadly cave of moon gold, flaming into a wild lust to conquer man and destroy the world.
So talk to me a little bit about this weird phenomenon, A, with oxygen on the moon, and then B, this weird underground city with what, a sunset? Like, what the hell's going on there?
Underground city?
Yeah.
Yeah. The caves and stuff, they were underground.
Oh, I didn't know that was a city.
So, I don't think you could have an underground city with a sunset. Maybe the light was caused by something else. Maybe there's glowing luncheon somewhere.
I mean, I have read books where they had simulated sunsets underground.
But they said they were conserving as much power as possible.
Yeah.
Which raises a serious question. They have water.
Yes. Apparently.
Get oxygen from water. You could just... Why
you know, at one point they bring out refreshments to the to them men folk. Like what? Where are they getting food from?
Yeah.
Why did they grow it?
Also, apparently they can make their own wine.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's cat wine or moon wine or space wine.
You'd think that this society of like super intelligent humanoids would have found some alternate source of power by
also,
now.
They can teleport. Yeah.
Right. They have like all this, they can teleport. They can project their thoughts onto people from very long distances away.
Surely they could have found a way to harness like the sun's power. Oh, well, maybe the problem was the atmosphere though. Was that what they said?
They said the oxygen's running out.
Yeah, I can't really think of any quick fixes for that.
The other thing is they mentioned, and I don't know whether you guys can tell me if this is accurate or not, is that they said that they were 200,000 miles from the Earth to the Moon. That doesn't sound accurate. I would have thought it was a lot more than that. Miss Lenore, I would have totally expected you to know that number right off the top of your head.
I don't. So 200,000 miles, and they're traveling at 25,000 miles. So it takes them about 8 hours of flight. I noticed that start was at 10 hours of flight.
Right.
34,000 miles.
How long?
234,000 miles.
Okay, so they were in the ballpark.
Yeah, so it takes about 9 hours and some change.
Okay, well, I guess that's not so bad. I did want to actually point out, since we were talking about the Catwoman was actually played by a group of ladies called the Hollywood Cover Girls. And they were a vaudeville act that went back to the 40s. So they were still around. So someone said, yep, let's utilize the Hollywood Cover Girls as the cat women. So there you go. That's where they came from.
Credits at the start when I said that. But I don't think it was them.
So the producers were Al Zimblist and Jack Rabin. They worked together previously on a really bad stinker that I have yet to show you called Robot Monster. It's one of the worst, most laughable, stinky science fiction movies of all time. The next time we all hang out together, I am showing you Robot Monster because it is wonderfully bad and even more cheaply produced than this one.
Gotcha. Sounds fun. I haven't shown you Branch yet. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Robot Monster is the one with the where they're using a bubble machine as the special effects. And it's a... It's a guy in a gorilla suit with a diving helmet on his head.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. I did want to point out, I did find one little interesting information nugget that I think Miss Lenore would find interesting. So apparently, in 1978, when NASA finally allowed women into the space program and said that they could be astronauts, they did apparently create a special makeup kit for female astronauts and so that they can apply their makeup. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I didn't. Actually,
that's such a waste of space.
I mean, every astronaut can bring personal stuff with them.
It's thoughtful, but, you know.
And I'm sure it was pink because, you know, women's stuff has always got to be pink.
They at least give everyone, like, the correct foundation and concealer. I bet they didn't.
So just think, Lenore, if in 1978 you could have had your own makeup kit for NASA.
That would have been fun, though, like a fun souvenir.
There you go. So I imagine there's probably a lot of weird, incorrect NASA stuff going on with this that I'm sure you could touch on that I would not be able to touch on because I'm not familiar with it like you.
Wayne Sands calling Moon Rocket 4, code 63. Can you hear us?
What we were talking about. I think we're on
the- you guys back?
Yes. I think we're talking about the makeup thing.
Makeup.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know that, you know, astronauts are given makeup kits. But the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of into it, though. Like, that's actually kind of cool.
Well, is there something that NASA should make for you guys that... you know, women might particularly need as astronauts in space that they don't currently have?
NASA, if you're listening, the thing that you could do for us specifically is to give me a job too. But as for the question specifically, what do you think? We should have come back to you. No, pretty much everything women need in space, they're already given. I thought there was like punish like menstrual products though. Like no. They sometimes give too little or too many. No, they have it pretty well.
Okay, so in the modern time, it's pretty well handled.
Yeah, and female astronauts can ask for birth control, too.
What about, like, pain medicine?
So you think female astronauts are pretty much well covered by this?
Everybody has some medical training on board.
I mean, are female astronauts, do they have, like, a different set of tests or a different psychology test or something? Or do they go through the exact same program that male astronauts do?
The exact same program. I don't know if the physical fitness stuff is reduced slightly, but they go through the same training generally.
Okay, well, that's probably good. How many female astronauts have there been in NASA?
To date, there have been, I believe, 700 astronauts. How many are female? That's a good question. Do you want me to Google it?
I mean, is it still a relatively small minority? I mean, I honestly don't know. That's why I'm asking.
There have been 65, including Russian cosmonauts.
Okay, so something under 10% then.
Yeah, a little bit under 10%, but yeah.
That's probably not a good representation of, as far as females being, you know, in NASA, how many of them are actually astronauts.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I mean, it is still considered a highly, highly dangerous profession, so... maybe they're just smart and said, you know what? I'll let the dumbass men do that.
Yeah, the majority of astronauts are actually poo-pooed in the military. That's a fair point. I thought they did like a study showing women are actually less likely to have health problems, though, in space. So yeah, NASA is actually starting to favor female candidates, at least for long missions. Among other things, because women weigh less and eat less, so less of a payload needed to launch them. And they're also a bit less likely to go blind and a bit less likely to lose bone density.
They still don't know why.
Well, even for men, I think they preferred smaller men. I think that was one of the reasons they liked fighter pilots, because they needed smaller carriages to fit into the cockpits of planes, and therefore, like you said, smaller payloads, smaller food requirements, all that. I mean, yeah. I guess you're not going to get a whole lot of football player astronauts up there.
That'd be a fun movie. Actually, all of the astronauts I've met have been fairly lean and a bit on the short side. Well, yeah, because they have to be small.
Okay. So, anything else we have to report about Catwoman on the Moon? As far as, I mean, Miss Lenore, I know you've seen a bunch of stinkers. How does this rank as far as some of the other stinkers that you've seen?
That's hard to say. It was not watchable. But it was slow and boring.
Are you sure? We put it on double speed at the end there.
It was slow and boring, and there were long pauses in the action. There wasn't much action, actually.
Not much really happened. I'm still confused by the ending.
Yeah, I'm a little confused by the ending, too. I mean, I'm not even exactly sure what happens. It sounds like the one, I mean, I know they clubbed the one poor Catwoman with a rock. And the others were, I guess, trying to get to the ship. And so they ran back before them and they blasted off. And that was it.
I can't remember. Was the business person still in the crew at the end? I thought he died.
He died.
Okay. I'd probably give this movie an 8.
It's not the worst I've seen, but I've seen better by a long shot.
Three or four?
We haven't quite got to the point where we're ranking our movie yet, but we will talk about that. I don't remember if you remember, Miss Yolanda, about how we decided to rank our movies. We rank it on a 1 to 10 scale, where 1 is only a little bit of stink and 5 is kind of in between and 10 is a whole big barrel of stink.
Oh.
So the higher the number, the stinkier it is.
I got you. Okay.
So Lenore's giving it an 8. What about you? I know it's harder since you haven't seen as many movies or ranked as many movies.
I'd say like a 7 or 8, yeah.
Well, you got to pick one. Or you could do 7.5 if that's your preference.
I'll say 8.
Okay, so a pair of 8s. All right, I tend to think this is stinkier than that. I'd probably go with a 9 because it's pretty bad. I mean, not only is it just bad scientifically, and the sets are all terrible. The spider hanging from the ceiling is terrible. The weird idea of these cat women who don't do anything except prey on men is terrible. Everything is pretty much terrible. But it's also, like Lenore says, it's boring. That's probably its worst sin, you know? And it's not like it's, you know, there are other movies very similar to this. Probably the most famous is Fire Maidens of the Moon or Fire Maidens from Outer Space. There's, you know, Queen of Outer Space. There's a whole bunch of, you know, women in space movies. There's Invasion of the Bee Girls. There's all kinds of weird stuff like that. And all of them, while being stinky, are probably more fun and more interesting than this particular one. Although this one pretty much comes close. This is the template that sets the standard for all the other chicks in space movies that came out. Did want to point out that this movie was riff tracked. So for those of you folks who love Mystery Science Theater and riff tracks, you can go and dig this up or go to their website and they will have that there. So, and I think I did point out that it was shot in 3D. Now, Rhino Home Video actually released a 3D VHS version back in 1993. So, you know, you had to have the little glasses and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't see one inkling other than there was at one point, I think when they first landed and they started wandering around aimlessly, you could kind of see some rocks that were sort of in the foreground and then their legs were behind the rocks. You know what I mean? I don't know if you guys picked that up. But I think that was sort of their attempt. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
Didn't notice it. Yeah, I think that was their attempt at 3D. So that's getting to me. That's kind of interesting. There weren't a whole lot of 3D movies ever. And for this to come out like that, it's kind of a big deal. I'm not sure why they wanted to do it this way, but they didn't do a very good job of it. And even if they did, I don't know what it would have added because there wasn't much going on.
Yeah. Maybe more people would watch it if it was 3D.
Yeah, it sounds probably like it would have been sort of like the flavor of the month or would have been, you know, just something fancy to throw out there for the kids, maybe to get their interest.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be the, you know, the spiders dangling from the wires, that's for sure.
I think the spiders were the best part.
And it wasn't going to be the romance. And it wasn't going to be the dancing. And there were no ray guns. You notice he had a gun. Oh, yeah. What about that other scene? What about the cigarette scene with the dark side and the light side of the moon? Tell me a little bit about that.
That wouldn't happen.
What exactly were they trying to demonstrate?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think they're just trying to give the actors an excuse to take off the bee suits or something.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to explain that there's an extreme temperature difference between the dark side and the light side.
It'd be a temperature gradient, though, not an extreme difference.
Right. You wouldn't just fry if you went from one side to the other, unless you were a cigarette, I suppose. I mean, you got to figure there's a cigarette's got a pretty low combustion point.
True. Yeah.
But it seemed like he said that they had to put on the special suits for the dark side. So maybe they had two different suits. Now, is that something that NASA has? Or would you have a one suit for the dark side and one suit for the light side?
I don't know. Spacesuits have a lot of layers in them for temperature regulation, so I'm not sure that'd ever really be a problem. I mean, spacesuits can handle vacuum. So,
what did you think of their suits? How accurate were they?
They tried to have the look down.
They were not accurate. So.
I mean, they had gloves that they pulled on. You could see there were gaps in there, and they had just like regular work boots on. They look shiny, though.
They look shiny. That was before the moon landing, right?
Yes.
That was before people in space at all, or?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can forgive them a little bit then.
Yeah, and I don't know what space suits for NASA would have looked like in 1953. I mean, I imagine we'd probably laugh at them now.
First ones used were just modified pressure suits for airplane pilots. But they look kind of weird.
Oh, it's because they weren't actually in the vacuum space.
Yeah, they were just modified air pressure suits for pilots, so they did look weird.
Because they didn't actually leave the ship then.
For fantasy, it was okay. It's a decent attempt.
I thought that the early suits also utilized diver belts that were weighted so that they could, because of the lack of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
That didn't seem like they used those.
No. I mean, I guess the suits might have been one of the better points because they really did try. And admittedly, the helmet that they used for outer space, it didn't look too far off.
I did notice that whenever they had those helmets on, they were yelling, probably because, you know, the actors couldn't hear each other. You would have thought they would have had little microphones or radio communicators inside the suit.
Since they had radios inside the ship.
Yeah, and I like how when they go into the cave, the quote unquote natural decompression chamber, and the one guy's, he just lights up a match, says, oh, look, there's oxygen, and just starts taking off his shit. Like, okay, well, I guess that's the explanation.
And all those people would die if they didn't.
I did notice they said one at a time, though. So I guess the figure, if one dumbass is going to take off your suit, at least only one of them is going to die. Sacrifice DD first, yeah.
Well, plus, isn't there such a thing as radiation? Isn't that really what the spacesuit is supposed to protect you from? That's still there, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, they forgot to show us the bonus ending, which is all of them in a retirement home in the future where they all have cancer.
No, they could die from radiation sickness first.
I'm being generous.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the launch would have exploded at some point during this film.
Okay.
This is where it happened in real life.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Barometric trauma is the ones. There are real life depressurization units used to treat it.
Okay, well, that's my half thought for the day.
So you're saying that natural decompression chamber could be a thing?
No, probably not. Not with airtight at all.
Yeah, I shouldn't think so.
But when people depressurize quickly, barometric trauma is something that can happen.
It bubbles in the blood, right?
Yeah, pressure difference inside and outside your body causes things to rupture, from leading to internal bleeding and other unpleasantness.
Again, more pleasant thoughts for the day.
Although I've heard that, you know, in other science fiction movies where if you're suddenly caught, you know, a sudden depressurization, if you're outside your suit or the window opens up, that you don't, like, explode. Like, that's kind of overdone from what I understand.
Oh, you don't explode, no. But things burst.
So like blood vessels and stuff.
Yeah.
It's probably not something I want to experience. So did this movie make you want to be an astronaut more or less?
I still want to be an astronaut, but I'm not laughing at all.
Are you going to bring a handgun and cigarettes to the moon?
No. Why would I?
What about spider puppets?
No, probably not.
Come on, you got to bring one. Just tie it to the ship. But make it be red. Use the ship spider or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if that doesn't represent America in the 1950s, cigarettes and a handgun, I don't know what does, honestly.
I just had a really random thought. What if a spider actually crawled into a ship while being built and somehow managed to crawl back out onto the moon when you landed?
All rockets are very rigorously tested before flight to make sure there's no bacteria or life or anything in it.
You surely can't get rid of all the bacteria and all the life. I mean, those astronauts are breathing out bacteria. Yes, but they do their best to sanitize it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, exactly how much, you know, how accurate are they when they do their weight analysis? I mean, how, does it go down to like the nearest, you know, gram?
I don't know. I've never been in those labs.
It's interesting.
How light a person would be on the moon?
Yeah, I think you are something like 40% of your weight or 50% of your weight or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it is, but clearly it didn't affect them there.
Nope, as Helen said, the boots were heavy.
The boots are heavy. That's right. All right. Well, I guess we've probably yapped enough about this. We have our scores. So 8s from both of you and then a 9 from me. So what's going on with you guys these days?
I'm applying to graduate school right now.
Okay. Well, that sounds good, Miss Yolanda. What are you trying to study?
I'm applying both for forensic anthropology and also biomedical programs.
Ooh, biomedical programs. What's that?
There I am. Okay, so I'm applying right now for Boston University's biomedical program for forensic science. And that's going to be more of like pathology, DNA analysis, things like that, like more traditional forensic science. And then I'm also applying for the forensic anthropology unit, which would be analyzing skeletal remains.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Yes.
Okay. What about you, Miss Lenore?
I'm applying for PhD programs in chemistry and material science. I'm hoping to join the National Institute of Aerospace, and I'm applying for the SMART Scholarship.
Outstanding. And you guys are just finishing up, you know, regular university studies right now for your BAs, right?
Bachelor's of Science.
BS. That's right.
And
are you? Are you both driving now?
A little. Yeah, we have our learner's permits. Because of the pandemic, they changed the requirements for getting a driver's license to be much easier.
Technically, we could get a driver's license by the end of the year, but we're probably not.
Yeah, so which, without driving tests.
Which one of you is the better driver?
Me. Oh, come on. I only drove into the ditch once.
She's a car into a ditch.
That's not a joke.
Oh my goodness, you drove in a ditch?
I survived the car ride every time.
How big a ditch?
What?
How big of a ditch?
It was like a drainage area in somebody's yard. I turned too far right.
Oh dear. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Whose car was it?
What?
Whose car was it?
My mom's. I have not been driving since. I can't imagine why.
Oh dear. Well, you guys, please be careful.
I know, I'm trying. I have a really bad fear of driving.
Aw.
Was that before or after the ditch? Before. I've always had fear of driving. Until that point.
You might want to think about doing grad school in a place where they have a really good public transportation system.
Yeah. You know.
And you guys are settled in your new place?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been living here for a while.
And I forget, you have separate rooms, or you guys together again?
Separate rooms. So I have the smaller one.
And I imagine she reminds you of that all the time, doesn't she, Lenore?
Only like once a week.
You guys are getting along though, right?
Yeah. And both of the guests have decided that I am their favorite bed now. One of them sleeps on my head, and the other decided that my throat was a good bed.
Of course. Who doesn't like a little throat sleep every now and again?
The thing is, even when I move her, she just goes back.
You know that old wives' tale that like a cat would sleep on your chest and steal your breath in your sleep? I'm absolutely convinced that was started by somebody who was allergic to cats and whose cat would sleep on their chest.
Well, you never know. Maybe that's where these cat women on the moon should have done. They should have just slept on the guy's face or slept on their throats, stolen their breath.
Cats have claws. I'm always so scared when they get near my throat because, you know, jugular is there.
Well, if you guys haven't already figured out, I think you should both get some cat onesies, and this way you can go as cat women of the moon for Halloween.
That'd be fun. Oh, on Halloween, there's a launch. A lot of the NASA interns are going to be having a watch party for it.
I didn't know about this. I'm not a NASA intern, though, but I didn't know about this.
Oh, yeah, there's a group chat for NASA.
Oh, okay.
Well, that sounds outstanding. We are going to have a wrap-up party for season 3 in December. Just Jen's going to be there, and I think Joe Torek's going to be there, and Moody's flying in from L.A. to be there. So I don't know if you guys are going to be busy or anything, but you're more than welcome to come up and join us, because it'll be a lot of fun.
Jen is cool. Jen is really cool. I like her cookies.
Oh, yeah. Jen makes great cookies. And we will be watching, and I guess I probably should not reveal the name of the finale, season 3 finale movie, but I am going to promise you that it is cat-oriented.
Curse of the Mummy Cat?
Possibly. There's definitely cats involved. We think we got an end-of-the-year cat thing going on.
Okay.
So let me know if you guys, if by some miracle you're able to come on up. We'd love to have you. You know, you can always stay at my place. And I got that new floor and all kinds of new stuff to show off, too.
Okay, we'll think about it. We'll let you know.
Yay. All right, well, I guess that wraps up this episode. Thank you both, the Miller sisters, for coming onto the show and talking about Catwoman of the Moon, this really weird stinker from 1953. We appreciate it. And we will see everybody on the next episode, and we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye. Have a nice day.